I think that's a big issue is like you have value proposition all over the place for any piece of technology that's on the floor out here. I mean, obviously someone's willing to buy it, but the incentive for the end users to use it, that's what you have to really build upon. And that's really, I mean, if they're not a part of that equation when you're purchasing tech, then you have the wrong tech.
Welcome to Built Different, a podcast featuring teams, technology, and trendsetters who are changing the way that we build. I'm Grant Hagen.
And I'm Brian Mazzaretta.
And we welcome you to join a community obsessed with questioning the status quo,
creating cultures of innovation,
and equipping everyone with powerful tools to quite simply build different.
Well, welcome back to the Built Different podcast, joined with Brian Vizzaretta. I'm one of your hosts, Grant Hagen. Thank you all so much again for tuning in with us here for episode 9. We are nearing the finish line here for season 2, and we just appreciate you guys coming back to us for another great conversation. We have two very different perspectives on the topic of top-down implementation versus bottom-up. Brian, what's your take? What camp do you land in?
I would say probably a bottom-up approach, more like an organic approach, but if I were to side on the top-down approach, it definitely would have to be around describing the why of why you're doing something, right? I think people just assume because somebody has a higher title that everybody else should just do what they're doing. But a lot of it just comes down to communication and, you know, how large a company really is.
Yeah, this is a really great opportunity to see two very different styles for implementation. And again, that's just what kind of our hope in these first few episodes have been. And this has been a common theme through a lot of them is just how to go about really getting the adoption from folks on the kind of end user side of it. And then folks from the leadership level who maybe are interested in what technology is being used. And so we are really excited to put this episode in front of you guys. We think it's a really great conversation between Mike and Nicole. And so thank you all for tuning in with us here. We will take it back to the ground break floor and we will see you on the next episode. Thanks.
All right. Welcome back to the Built Different podcast powered by Drone Deploy and Structure Site. We are here with Mike and Nicole. Thank you guys for joining with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is really fun. So first things first, we'd love to just hear a little bit about your background, what you guys are doing right now. Mike, I'll kick it to you.
So my name is Mike Rusconer. I work for EJ Electric. It's an electrical contractor in New York City. I worked for another company for 6 or 7 years out of college. I've been with EJ for almost 11, but predominantly with EJ.
Yeah, that's great. And the specialty contractor side of it, it is, we're going to get into some really good stuff because I think that is a unique spot in itself for a lot of the folks that are either here at this conference or that are tuning in with us that are interested in technology, how it can be applied, what are the ways in which you guys have seen success in it. So yeah, really excited that you're going to be here with chat with us. Cool.
Awesome. So I'm Nicole Carter. I have my own consulting firm, with doing primarily Procore consulting. So rollout or relaunch of Procore for GCs, owners, and specialty contractors.
Awesome. And how long have you been doing that for?
About a year and a half, and have been rolling Procore out on corporate-wide for companies beforehand for the last 8 years.
Awesome. What got you interested in the consulting side of it? Or how did you kind of get into that? And what?
And don't let her downplay this. Her background is extensive.
A little bit. Yeah.
Let's go into that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I was working for GCs for a while and, you know, kind of identifying issues that were very basic, like disconnected job sites, right? Or isolated job sites. People felt like they couldn't tap into the information that other PMs were seeing in the field. So, this is long coming, right? The centralized platform and getting into a place where you have people sharing information. They could be in the same city or they could be outside of the country. And that was really where I started kind of like poking holes in processes and making sure that we actually were somewhere where we could actually share information. So, I don't know. I've definitely been working in this space for quite a while, but knowing that I could do a little bit more for companies when I didn't have to be a part of a company, that sounds really bad. But there's just some nuances with the companies and relationships. And, I love building relationships with my clients, but they don't pay me to come in and tell them what they want me to tell them. Right. They pay me big money to come in and actually tell them what they need to hear. Yeah. So I think that that's having that kind of off-the-cuff relationship with a lot of the clients that I have now you see people recoil initially and then come back a couple of weeks later and say, I totally see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And it is a value proposition. All of this is, at the end of the day, if they don't see money coming back to them with the investment that they're making, whether it's a piece of technology or a consultant, they're going to not hire you again,
yeah,
or
for sure,
continue using you. So it's been really awesome to kind of see how much impact I can have when I'm not a part of an organization.
Yeah.
So it's been really awesome.
Yeah, well said. I think what's really fascinating for a lot of the folks that are tuning in is this idea of using consultants and engaging with consultants. I think we interact with a lot of folks from industries from companies that are like, hey, I'm going to white knuckle this thing.
I'm the first to advocate for bringing in consultants for ERP integrations,
sure,
and launches, or, you know, specialty service, you know, apps. There are people out there that have already white knuckled this stuff for five, yeah, companies whole. They're going to tell you what's working, what's not working. They're also going to tell you to let some of your processes or some of your overthinking go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear it and have it be inflected upon of like actual product at the end of the day or results, I think that it speaks for itself a lot of the time.
So I think also to like add to Nicole's point is it's a lot of this is in its infancy.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of those people who have gone through that white knuckle process at a specific company or have done it at multiple companies, they have a unique skill set in it, right? Because they've been doing it for 5 or 6 years into what it hits construction. So on some of the consulting side too, sometimes it might just be better to have somebody come in fresh eyes who's not so caught up in the way that that company does business and just kind of ask the question of like, why do you do this way?
Yeah.
And then have actual examples from other places that they've already gone through some of those processes. So to me, I think there's a significant value add as well at that level.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about it too is that you said fresh set of eyes, right? I mean, when your nose is down in the process or nose is down in something for so long, you often forget to look up.
It was an eye-opening thing to me. I'm sure Nicole's had the same experience. But, you know, when you're newer at this and you're kind of just, you know, going to the department heads or the people that have, you know, set these processes in place, you know, prior to you. And you just come back and, you know, I kind of lead now with when there's a process bottleneck somewhere. And I'm like, okay, so is this a system problem or is this like an EJ problem, mm-hmm, right? For our company, right? Are we doing this as best we should be? Like maybe the platform's actually providing a better workflow or a better process for this thing. So it's like, it's definitely something that I think you have to kind of step back from what you've been doing for a while and really just truly look at like what it is you're trying to solve for and not just force it into the way you've been doing it for 20 years.
You're so right about that, right? Like people sometimes believe just because you buy a software, it's going to fix all your problems.
Oh.
And I mean, let's just go there. Let's go that direction. Like what are your thoughts on that phrase right there?
So me and Nicole met, I don't know, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Right. So we met 5 years ago at another conference. And I mean, we clicked instantly because I think we had a lot of the same views on everything. That the number one thing I've said about any software that we bring in is it doesn't instantly create the best project manager, the best client. It doesn't create any of that. It does identify people who maybe aren't doing well, right? Because now they're in a system and now there's, you know, actual data that you could view. But if you're looking to buy something off the shelf and then just go to start using it, like that's a definitely a recipe just to fail almost at every level.
Yeah.
But also, right? Let's say, for example, 360 cameras and remote collaboration, right? Just because you have that ability, if you don't have a culture or an incentive or, you know, an initiative to make sure people are actually using that, that technology could just sit on the shelf the entire time.
And it often does. Untapped, right? I think that's a big issue is like you have value proposition all over the place for any piece of technology that's on the floor out here. I mean, obviously someone's willing to buy it, but the incentive for the end users to use it, that's what you have to really build upon. And that's really, I mean, if they're not a part of that equation when you're purchasing tech, then you have the wrong tech.
Yeah.
You have the wrong purchaser.
Tell me, man, this is turning into a very, very good conversation because how do you do that though? like, how do you involve the, I mean, yes, you can get focus groups, you can get people together, you can do meetings, but like, what are some of the ways that you've seen to effectively gather the feedback from the end user?
So I'm going to let Nicole go first because she has like true clear methods. Some stuff I've stumbled upon has just been luck or by chance that we just like, oh, wow, that's interesting how that worked. We're going to use that going on. But, you know, I would say from your angle.
Like a prescriptive method is choosing by advantages, like actually having, you know, a focus group doing demos of different softwares and then coming together and collectively leaving cost off the table. Yeah, like that's the really hard piece is people cannot get past that when you're doing this choosing by advantages like process. But realistically, it will change your mindset on what purchases are required, are wants versus needs, and then which ones can just maybe sit on the shelf for a couple of years. And when you actually get those people, the end users say, you know what, we don't need this. We want it, but we don't need it because there wasn't a proposition. It's pretty... And they come to terms with you not purchasing that tech. And that really validates, you know, whether the organization was ready or not ready for it. And it really is the end user who is articulating that, not an executive level that is doing it based off of dollars and cents.
So the end user is going to tell you definitively whether it was a good purchase or not, right? So it's probably better to ask them up front, as opposed to them just telling you just from lack of usage of whatever you just spent X amount of money for on the other side, right? Because, you know, typically from my experience, right, because I've only done this one place, but, you know, a lot of people push the top down, you know, it's got to come from the top down. It's got to be that way. And I just have not found that to be true in my experience. Anything that's been successful for our company has always been like a grassroots aspect, because we're truly interacting with the end users of who that's affecting, you know, from the start of that workflow to the end of it, right? So is this an immediate ROI for the end user? Because if you can't demonstrate that, it's very hard to sell the overall bottom line ROI to the company, because really ultimately the person wants to do their job easier and more efficient.
I have a question for you, and then I want to transition a little bit more to the top-down talks from your part, Nicole, but how do you engage with folks that don't want to be engaged with from a bottom-up approach? Like, I think that's a little bit of a challenge on the construction side too, where it's like, hey, I've seen this story before. I know where this is going. I don't see the immediacy of the ROI of how this is going to help me. Like, talk a little bit about that.
I could just give a couple of examples. I would say all people are different. So for people who are resistant, there's a couple reasons that I've identified why people are resistant, right? Some people are very, very scared of technology in general. If they don't interact with it on a daily basis, kind of really throwing something new to them out of left field. And, you know, there's some people who've just been burned by other things, right? So, you know, typically the most resistant people you get are probably your most successful seasoned, like, foreman. On jobs, from my experience, right? They've been doing this 30 years, right? They make money for the company. They have a system that works. And they're not really all that interested in kind of changing how that flows, because they cracked it on their end of how they've been successful. So a couple things that we've stumbled on, or I stumbled on, was one of the first projects we rolled out on with a new software, we just had a guy who had a flip phone. Like, he never texted, he never did anything. And he just happened to be a guy that everybody knew throughout my company. So we trained him, and we spent a lot of extra time on him to get him up to speed. And, like, you know, it didn't dawn on me any of it. We're just trying to get him to, you know, get the product working. But what that ended up doing downstream was that as we went to each job site, we would reference that, like, that guy was using the project on a daily basis. And man, that like changed the room instantly as to like, oh my God, so-and-so is using this.
If he can do it, y'all better be able to
do it. So yeah, so it makes people laugh. And like, it makes people, I think, react to it in two ways. One, okay, this can't be as hard as I think it is if so-and-so is doing it. And then to what Nicole said, like, you know, I better be able to do this because I don't really have an excuse if if this is what's already happening. And we just stumbled upon that. So, you know, we had, prior to that, we've always gone to like our stronger tech teams. And, you know, looking at that instance, I think we realized that if you were able to get something off the ground with somebody who's deemed not to be that computer savvy, I think it pays off for you down the road.
Yeah, and it's hard too, because like that, you said it at the front, like they required more time and yep. more, but that time is an investment. It's not just a draw. Like it's not something that's wasting time. It's investing time. And some people just don't see it that way.
I mean, like, what do you think?
I definitely see the benefits, right? Of like doing that kind of that approach of like, not lowest common denominator, but like definitely the ones that are the kind of the pain in the butts, right? They're like, if this 65-year-old plus guy that, you know, does not do technology, does not do social media, can adopt this and actually use it and see a benefit from it, then turn around and like, I think scream that from the hilltops. Because if you publicize that those folks are buying in and they're seeing a benefit, then they've got reputation, right? Like, yeah. That guy is a seasoned guy. He's respected. He's valued in the company. He's probably like, you know, the guy that is handing out awards at the end of the year. I definitely think that those are the people that you want on your side if you're rolling anything out. And I think naturally companies gravitate to, well, the young guns over there, let them try the new tech. They'll turn and burn new tech as fast as they possibly can. And so if you are only isolating your tryouts or your demos of these tech tools to the young guns that are, you know, again, they're flashy, like they want something brand new. That's not the audience that you want to be bringing into those discussions, because, again, they're going to see something else on the shelf that has something flashier and they're going to be on to the next thing. But if you can get buy-in from people that are seasoned, they'll have the value and the reputation to actually make it stick.
Well said. But also seeing the long-term vision, right?
Like, true.
On my site, I had one of the most respected general superintendents that I worked under. And, you know, being able to create the deliverables and him be able to see the value, he saw this in 20 different ways that I could never see it.
Totally.
Right?
Tap into that knowledge, that historical, like, it's insights that they would have died for when they were like, you know, young. So it's them being able to, that they're going to publicize it. They're going to be like, look at what this can do for you. Yeah, that's absolutely the best person to be screaming from the hilltops about what that solution brought to them. Because the insights are incredibly valuable if you can provide that or like produce something for them.
I think to kind of transition from what you were saying, Mike, like, hey, some really good approach of like, hey, spend more time, be like intentional with the folks that may require that on the kind of bottom-up approach. I'm curious to hear kind of some of your thoughts on the top-down. Like, I think it's important to note, just as a caveat, like there's no one size fits all. Like these are for sure different tactics that have different approaches with different software, with different implementation, with different whatever. And so, but I think what's important for the listener is like, hey, these are things that are effective in those respective ways of going about it. And I'm just kind of curious to hear.
Yeah, it's just a different strategy. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I see a lot of companies that have a lot of people doing a lot of amazing things, but the executive leadership team is kind of just let it lie, right? Yeah. Like, here's the tech, go do your thing. And that's not how, I don't see a whole lot of benefit in the long run, because if you don't have somebody that's at the helm and who's leading it, whether they're an admin or, you know, somebody in-house, I just think that there has to be somebody that's tapped into both the boots on ground and also the boardroom. There has to be somebody in the middle that understands both sides of the coin. They can actually give some insight as to what challenges, you know, process improvement coordinator is a new role that I'm seeing pop up everywhere. And I really love the fact that that's a culture person. That's someone who is willing to go out and listen to issues and have them kind of draw upon that experience and be able to inflect that upon like real strategy as to what needs to come. And realistically, I think that, again, if you don't have that person in flux, but also somebody at the top that says, this is what we're doing, this is our path, I just think that you're going to be floundering.
Yeah.
You need a very, I think, unique person, because that person's hard to come by or find in an organization. Yeah. And that person needs to also, I think, understand the the politics and the dynamics within that organization and be able to communicate that in many different ways, right? Depending on whatever it is you're implementing. Because that person now uniquely becomes involved in, I would say, a lot of the departments mm-hmm. that it touches. And on a bigger, bigger company, you know, finding those people that are able to move the needle or to champion the product and to, you know, assist is tough. I think sometimes that's challenging to find.
And I'm going to ask the same question I asked you. The disengaged leadership, you're a consultant. You've seen these things. You've probably seen some patterns. You've probably seen some, let's just call it more disengaged than some. Like, how do you tackle that part of it? Because that is a big challenge, big, big challenge.
Yeah.
That I think people feel like, hey, I'd rather hit a grand slam than singles. And the singles on the ground and trying to get people coming around. But hey, I want to swing for the fences.
Yeah.
And it keeps coming up to the plate. This
dude, I think it's the data. At the end of the day, I feel really bad coming back to that. It's that rudimentary. But when you can actually show results or show disengaged results, you're going to see a pattern that probably is inflected upon each level of the organization. That PMs aren't doing their, you know, budget like forecasts. That's probably an issue. We've got supers who aren't doing dailies, all of these levels. But if you can go back to the office and say, here's a report that shows that these guys are disengaged versus these guys who are effectively engaging in the tech,
They're
using the tools that they have in their fingertips, how much more are they winning? How much more profitable are we if we're, you know, analyzing those data points? I swear everything, it's all very intuitive. Yeah. When you can actually show it visually, it speaks volumes.
I think this shameless plug a little bit for StructureInsight as a tool, just the enterprise analytics side of it.
Yeah.
We use that in a lot of our executive business reviews of like, hey, you may not know the tech stack that we're investing in at a leadership level, but we want you to know what it is and how it's being used and who is using it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the really important thing too is, you know, we talked about this qualitative and quantitative ROI. That is the qualitative, right? Like that's the hard numbers, the data, the dashboards, that kind of stuff. But, or sorry, that's the quantitative. I mix them up. The quantitative data, but then the qualitative stuff is those stories of like, man, if I can get Jim or Jack or John or Jolly or whomever like bought in on that and they're my story that I can share with whomever. To really kind of embrace this idea that this is where it's going.
You should be analyzing that stuff though as well. Like end user usage is a huge sign of inflection point of either failure or success. I mean, and if you're not actually, and you don't need to dive deep into what they are doing in the tools, but they better be using the tool, you know? And I think that folks don't understand that that's a part of the resource that you have in all of these platforms is that you can tap into user data and you should be using that. And you should be using your customer reps to analyze what tools are being used, what aren't being used. Start tapping into that and start setting up strategy for better training sessions. Yeah.
Some question to that. Should that be on demand, available anytime for the end user?
100%.
Totally agree.
Forward facing, it's a problem. And I would demand that it should be forward facing
to the end user anytime they want to see usage analytics.
Me being a PM, I want to be able to see what the other PMs, where they're at, where I scale, right? I don't want to say that it's competitive, but it's gamification and it will in the long run benefit your organization if you have kind of metrics set up that shows their usage counts. And I say that in every capacity. RFIs, how many RFIs are we processing? How long does it take to close those out? What variances do I see from project type to project type? All of these things will improve your overall give in use because they know that you're looking as well. And I feel bad. I don't want to sound big brother, but that's definitely, it's a benefit of the tools when you can see all this stuff.
And nothing she's saying is deep dive to get that information.
Not at all.
It's all pretty surface level that anyone's monitoring it on even a very part-time basis or doing weekly or monthly reports, you could grab those insights, you know, pretty quickly to get those off to the department or whoever to kind of, you know, hey, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not a deep metric to get.
It's a way to like actually use it as an ally tool as well from a, you know, in-house construction tech person. They go to somebody and say, hey, you know, we're seeing that you aren't feeling so comfortable with this tool. Can we provide training? Can we provide additional assets to you, support in any capacity? Because that's a good way for them to show that, like, we can be an ally. If you have a white flag, like, raise that thing, let us know what you need help with. We'll be there. And the second time that something comes up on their end, they're going to call you instead of sitting there and delaying.
Definitely. If you make yourself available to that, people are comfortable with bringing that question to you or talking to you, then they'll definitely reach out. But on a grand scale, most people don't raise their hand on things that aren't really working that great. I mean, I'd say it's a high percentage of people that are just like, well, this is what they gave me to use and this is what I'm using and I don't want to raise my hand for whatever various reason, right? So definitely trying to identify, just, you know, to re-engage that person from a different standpoint to what Nicole was saying, you know, definitely, you know, we've seen add value as well.
Yeah.
I appreciate the question you're asking, because just in regards to interacting with people, because, you know, I think that's from the conferences I've been at, it's not really talked about how important that is to really build those relationships and kind of be quick on your feet when you're out there trying to roll something out, because it's challenging. And there's some people that are resistant just based on the fact that they're passionate about what they do. They care, right? And they're really focused from their perspective as to, you know, how they see, right? Yeah. So all those conversations are great, but you're going to get those, you know, across the entire organization from all different people that are involved in the process.
Yeah.
But it's hard to navigate and to manage to really kind of truly scale something across a whole organization. I actually had one question.
Yeah, go for it.
So if you had to say, from a lot of the companies you've interacted with, what do you think are, you know, the top two things that those companies do that kind of set them up to not be successful? Like, are there any common themes that you've seen in the amount of times that you've done this?
Yeah, I think not having the right people at the table. Again, having end users at the table from the get-go, even if you're just configuring the tools, right? Setting the thing up for success happens in the back doors, typically in the late hours. And most of the time, you don't have the people that are actually going to be the end users in those sessions. And they've got to be, because they are the ones that are going to be in the field selling it to their fellow folk. I think also making sure that you've got a broader picture, that this isn't siloed. You know, I think a big thing we've been talking about a lot is siloed data. And I'm not talking siloed data. I'm talking about connectivity, those silos. Best-in-class solutions all over the place are going to be the key to the future. I think the development you're seeing in the ERP space, the CRM space, in Procore, the ops platform space, I think siloed data is good, but if it's not connected and if you're entering it 6, 7, 8 times to get data moved from one platform to the next, you're doing yourself a disservice. If you're not doing like constructive, detailed mapping of data flow, you're not doing yourself anything.
I totally agree.
When do you like have to go way far back in the process, and when do you go like very minute in the like the detail of the process itself? Does that make sense?
When you're implementing or when you're
like, I think when you're evaluating a process in general, right? Like when you stay super high level of like, hey, it's
reverse engineering is always the way to go. What is the result, the outcome that you're trying to get to, and what do we need to do to get there? That's what I found has been the best, because you'll find that some things aren't as complicated as you might think they are, because all you have to do is to get to that result. So I mean, don't start from A to B. You definitely want to make sure that you're looking at it from a lens of, you know, disconnection in that regard, because if you can get to the same result, it doesn't really matter which direction you go. And I think that that's a big piece of the pie. But again, I think that if you're not mapping, if you're not actually looking at things, I mean, I'm talking whiteboard with like icons of like all the tech that you have. If you're not doing an analysis of what you're spending annually, you don't have any kind of insight as to what tech has been purchased in the shadows. All of that needs to be on a whiteboard somewhere, so you've got true understanding as to what, where your stuff is at, where your data lies.
Also, something, Nicole, to that, would you also say that
you know, mapping where you want to go, but also how fast do you want to get there and being realistic about what that's going to take to get that. You know, it's like, oh, we want to enterprise this in 3 months. It's like, well, we need everybody on board. We need everybody from, you know, from the beginning, from the bottom to the top. Every single person has to be clear on the actual use case of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Right? Like just being realistic of like, when do you want to get there?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think if you're not being practical, if you're not being strategic about this stuff, you are doing yourself a disservice, because the second you roll it out, if you don't have buy-in, you have a whole nother obstacle that you put in your way. And that is going to be overcoming the burden of getting past the failure that you already set yourself up for. And we've all been there. I mean, I definitely have occurrence that I've like done something and just pulled the trigger on it and then really wish I could walk it back, because it left such a bad taste in so many people's mouth that it was hard to overcome that failure. But yeah, you got to be strategic about it and you got to be realistic, because things don't happen overnight. Yeah. And especially something so nuanced as a big tech rollout or multiple pieces getting integrated, or
it's tough too.
Mike's over here like, man, I totally agree.
Well, it's funny how she says it, because and you have to work within the parameter, whatever the company is that you're working for, right? So it's, you know, I don't know how much some people need to report on things or what the buy-in process is up front. I know for me personally, like we try to do things so behind the curtain until we're assured that that's going to go.
Whereas I'm a wrecking ball.
So here comes
Nicole.
Seriously.
Yeah. So we try to do it behind the curtains and not really tell a whole ton of people. And then like, I almost like to release something or reveal it like an Apple product where it's like, hey, we've been working on this. Here's how it all works. Yeah. And we beta to this group of people, right?
With the turtleneck and everything?
Like, not the turtle. I don't go full
turtleneck.
The black
turtleneck. Let's go.
But I definitely try to hold it back so that it's way past the conceptual stage.
Yeah,
and that people can like actually see it. But I don't think every organization has the, you know, has the ability to do that in some cases.
Yeah. When they have a wrecking ball.
Yeah, when they have a wrecking ball.
Absolutely. I mean, and also both of you bring two different perspectives, but if you can do both at the same time, you can do both at the same time, right? Yeah. Like having both field buy-in and top down, like that's best case scenario. But sometimes you kind of got to start at one or the other and then go from there.
Yeah. If I was starting over today, like if I was just getting going, the consultant route would definitely be something I think, you know, we would jump on right away in a lot of different initiatives, because you could just get so much better information across a bunch of different platforms.
Yeah, that's why we have this conversation, so we can bring these experiences to other people that are just going through the process now.
Right? Yeah.
Like you're talking to yourself in the past right now on this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
One last question, because this is great, great stuff. And I think, again, the idea around the conversation we're having is like encourage the folks of implementing the challenges that are arising, the ways to overcome, some tactics and kind of strategies along the way. What would you guys say to folks that just are like growing weary in the implementation of various things, process, tech, politics within their own, like, I can relate to that weariness. It can be exhausting where you're just, you feel like you're climbing this mountain. I mean, you guys have been through a lot of implementations and have seen really good positive things and challenges overcome. But what would you guys say to folks that maybe are in that phase or funk? That's just like, is there ever a light at the end of this tunnel?
Yeah. I mean, there's always a light. And I think it being open and honest with them from the get-go. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had a guy walk up to me and say, you know, I appreciated that you said that they had made this investment for 3 years, because we're so used to seeing stuff come and go so quickly. So I needed to pay attention in this session because I know it's going to stick around for 3 years. You know, and really being honest about what the process is and what like kind of longevity if a piece of tech is going to have in your organization. Because I think a lot of people are weary, but being upfront about it in the first place, I think is helpful.
Yeah.
So I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I think people who grow weary and get a little bit like, you know, beaten down by the whole process, you know, maybe they need to self-reflect on how they're going about it, right? Maybe, you know, maybe they got to kind of change their approach to however they're interacting with their organization. Because if they're not seeing any traction at what they're trying to get done, like, you know, I would say that, you know, that would be a sign for me as to like, okay, so I've been working on this for 6 months. We haven't really moved the needle at all. You know, what could I be doing differently, you know, at that standpoint?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you are at a construction company. A lot of things get done on trust and respect.
So, yeah. And then like at a construction company, or depending how competitive they are, right? So really, as in construction tech, what's like the best case scenario for anyone who's doing construction tech? To me, the outcome is it implemented, everybody's using it. And then it's like the thought process of like, yeah, I don't know why we weren't doing this for like the past 10 years, right? It just works. It seems like a no-brainer decision, but it kind of, people forget about that pretty quickly, right? So then it's kind of like, you know, what is your roadmap? What's the next thing you're looking at? How are you going to continuously keep making incremental changes for a bigger overall, you know, value add to the company? And how does that all work down the road? Because, you know, they're only going to look at it as, you know, oh, that was great for so long. And then it just kind of falls in.
Yep. Now becomes your standard. It's like, okay, great.
Yeah. So that's your best case scenario. Your best case scenario is your company's like, yeah, we should have been doing that for like 10 years. I don't know why it took so long.
Great stuff, team. Great conversation. Really appreciate it, Mike, Nicole. Appreciate your guys' time. Super fun. Well, team, thank you guys so much for joining in with us. This is really fun. Really great conversation. And I think the exciting part about it is how do we bring just more structure? How do we bring more experience? How do we bring more expertise around this topic of implementation? So appreciate the time. Really appreciate you guys coming in.
Make sure to subscribe to Built Different on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's build this community together.